Ron Demke, thank you so much for coming in to WRTI.
It's a pleasure.
The Allentown Band is celebrating its 190th anniversary. That's a long time.
A long time. The first performance was July 4th, 1828. The band evolved as a brass band, which almost every community in the country had mid-19th century. They would have been brass and percussion and maybe one soprano woodwind, like an E-flat clarinet or a piccolo, but it was known as a brass band. Some of the history, it was called the Silver Cornet Band or the Allentown Brass Ensemble. In other words, it evolved until it became the band that we know now with the woodwinds, brass, and percussion.
Which is more a symphonic band.
It is indeed, yeah. The terminology, it's interesting you ask that because immediately in many people's minds, the band is a group that plays marches, polkas, waltzes, or whatever. And that's indeed part of the heritage. There's no question about it. But as things grew and became more serious, the band was able to take on more substantial music, often in the way of transcriptions. The orchestral transcriptions or piano transcriptions were a major part of the repertoire at the turn of the last century. But then in the 20th century in particular, serious composers started writing serious music for bands. And a lot of bands changed to a symphonic band or a wind ensemble or a wind orchestra, all sorts of terminology to try to perhaps upgrade your thinking about the seriousness of the ensemble.
So through the course of your season, where do you play and for whom do you play?
We normally play 45 to 50 concerts annually. Many of the concerts are in the summer and our home base for the summer concerts would be the West Park Band Shell, which the band actually opened. The band played for the opening of that venue in 1908. We still do church picnics, openings for buildings. Allentown is going through somewhat of a renaissance right now, and the band plays for the opening of a bank or whatever, as it did many years ago, whether it be a fire station or a nursing home or whatever. So we really feel a connection to the community. We do our own concerts at these outdoor events, as well as Miller Symphony Hall, and do a lot of different kinds of programming throughout the course of a year. One of the things I'm most proud of is the fact that the band realizes the importance of connecting to the younger generation, and we have an outreach program, an education outreach program that involves young people's concerts, not unlike the Leonard Bernstein Young People's Concert. They're geared specifically for elementary through middle school age, and we reach about 2,200 students each year through that program. And then the other part of our outreach is the side-by-side, where we'll invite 50 to 55 high school musicians to sit alongside of the band members for half the concerts. Usually it will invite guest conductor or nationally recognized soloist to come in. So it's really part of our, an important part of our mission and one that we're very proud of. The band has always been connected to the community.
It strikes me that the band may be more than about just music. It may be about a certain kind of culture.
Yeah, there's definitely a culture to the band tradition. It's really a hybrid in that the band people, our band is a community band, but it's also a professional band in that the performances that we do, the musicians are paid. Rather small fee. It's a labor of love, quite frankly. But all of the rehearsals are volunteer. It's our band. You know, we govern ourselves. The band is governed by a board, but the board is made up of band members.
And you have uniforms.
We do.
With ribbons and stripes and buttons that signify things.
Yeah, it's kind of a neat tradition. When we go back to the 19th century, the Allentown Band, just as almost every other band you might see photos of, had the high-collar wool coat that was used actually by the Sousa Band, the professional Sousa Band. But there's a close relationship between the Allentown Band and the Sousa tradition, in that 19 or 20 members of the Allentown Band were recruited by Sousa to play in his professional band. And the most famous in our history would be Albertus Myers, who played solo cornet with John Philip Sousa Band and then came back in 1926 to conduct the Allentown Band. One of the first things he did when he came back is change the uniform from that high-collar uniform that was used by so many and made it a little bit more distinct. And what he did is he chose the uniform that John Philip Sousa wore as his most proud moment as a professional conductor. John Philip Sousa is certainly known perhaps best as a former conductor of the United States Marine Band. However, he was never made an officer by the Marines, and he always had that image in his background. So he, after retiring, quote unquote, he was hired to train the Navy bands up at the Great Lakes Station, and he got the pay of $1 a month, but they made him an officer. So he wore a lieutenant uniform with the two stripes. And that to this day is the uniform that the band wears. The stars and bars that are worn just above the left pocket, the bar is given to a member on the first year, and then a star is added for every 5 years. So it signifies the number of years that the member has played with the band.
The membership of the band is not paid generally.
That's correct.
Small amount.
It
sounds like it's somewhat of a family.
Truly. In fact, we have five married couples within the band, and we also have a very steady membership. It's not uncommon for members to spend 20 or 30 years in the band. The most obvious of that is our the dean of the band, Ezra Wenner. Ezra Wenner plays the trombone, joined the band in 1942. Imagine that, 76 years in the band. And he's just done everything. He's been a soloist, the section leader, secretary, treasurer, librarian, president. He went through all of those various responsibilities. And we do have young people. We have a young clarinet player who's 19, just graduated from high school last year. And I like to look at the numbers of 19 and 91 paralleling each other or bookending each other, which means it's just music is for life. You know, if you enjoy it, you can do it and you stay healthy. You can just enjoy it for a lifetime.
Let's talk about the music. The music, as you mentioned earlier, most commonly associated with bands are marches.
Marches, polkas, waltzes, right. The traditional lighter kind of a thing, but perhaps less serious. But having said that, the march really shouldn't be looked at in a denigrating kind of a way. The march has a very unique spirit to it. It's part of the background of the band. It's indigenous to the band. And so many things that the march can do are fundamental to good musicianship. As a teacher, you can teach dynamics, and you can teach rhythmic precision, ensemble, balance, form. It's just all there in a three-minute work.
Do you have a particular march?
No.
You could point to?
I don't. because there are just so many. I mean, there's so many. We obviously play lots of Sousa marches. We have an encore book that has 70 published marches that we take on every performance, and the band can pick that up without any rehearsal and just play any of those at any given time. And then additionally, we have another 70 marches in an encore book by other American composers and other European composers. So at any given point, we're at about 130 or 140 pieces on the stand that we could draw from. And I do that. I'll pull marches out as an encore after a major piece just to change the palette of the program.
Do you have any march that's significant to you personally, the first march you ever played, or the march that you love to play, or a go-to march?
You know, this is going to be very, perhaps very obvious, but the Stars and Stripes comes to mind because so many people like it, so many people know it, and yet I played for Leonard Smith, Detroit Concert Band, and he told us very early on, you need to approach this march as if it's the first time you're playing it, because someone in that audience very likely will be hearing it for the very first time. So it's a very significant piece just because it's so familiar.
So you have marches, and related to that, other holiday and patriotic music.
Yeah, we do several veterans programs. Flag Day, we do several Flag Day programs. We do a big tribute to veterans program the first Sunday or Saturday in December, and it's become very, very significant. The last three, we zeroed in pretty much on World War II, and we had the good fortune of having 22 World War II veterans at our last concert.
And you also do big band music, you do film scores, you do Broadway.
Well, we do, quite convincingly, I think, the various styles of playing, because our players are comfortable with transcriptions of orchestral works, contemporary band pieces, popular things. This summer, we're doing two programs that I think are significantly different in that they're going to be done indoors in Symphony Hall, and we're going to be playing a program with wonderful singer from Broadway, Karen Shin, who played the Phantom of the Opera 1,000 times on Broadway and Toronto. And then a bit later, we're going to do another program at Symphony Hall. We're going to be playing the music for Phantom of the Opera 1925 Lon Chaney silent film. So we will not be using a specific score to that. I've just chosen music that would fit the action on the screen, much like the old theaters had their old theater pianist or organist or whatever, and trying to play chase music or romantic music or mystery music.
There is something I think about brass instruments, or they're used often to create this sense of nobility,
mm-hmm.
or it can be very romantic.
Mm-hmm. Or it can be very introspective, for example. In the John Williams recording that we did on the occasion of John Williams' 85th birthday, we have some real varieties of sound in that we do Schindler's List with the violin soloist. We also had the good fortune of having the Moravian College Choir join us on two pieces. And again, pretty introspective with the Hymn to the Fallen, as well as the Dry Your Tears, Africa, from Amistad. They're very kind of emotional things. But then you have some really, you know, brassy. We have the Raiders March on there, and a number of pieces from Star Wars. So, I think that the band can be very successful in evoking emotions.
Right. So it's interesting because I see on some of your materials you have a library of more than 5,000 scores and parts.
Yeah, that's the number that are cataloged. We actually have a couple of boxes and file cabinets filled with music that from, you know, years back that haven't even been put into the database. It's a large library.
Wow. And you have recordings, more than 31 volumes.
31 in our Band Heritage series, and we've done just about one per year for the last 31 years.
Well, with such a huge repertoire and access to so much music that spans so many different styles, how do you program?
That's something that I really take seriously. And as you might expect, much of it has to do with the venue or the timing or whatever. I mean, it's pretty obvious if we're going to be playing a July 4th concert, it's going to be a patriotic selection, a patriotic program primarily. We've been doing church concerts recently, more often recently, actually. And there we have the advantage of having good acoustics. Usually it's in a rather large venue, and we can really mix it up. It doesn't mean that it has to be all religious music, but it can be some inspirational or religious music, and in addition to the standard repertoire.
So as you celebrate your 190th anniversary, anything special that the band is doing?
Something very special in that the band has commissioned world-class composer, nationally acclaimed Dutch composer, Johan de Mey, who did a piece for the band. It's about a 12-minute piece, and it's in the style that is not unlike a Ralph Vaughan Williams suite, for example. It's a very clever story. We discussed what shall we write, and he asked me about Pennsylvania folk songs. You know, what can we use that's inherent and typical of Pennsylvania? Well, there are a number of Pennsylvania German things specifically. But there's the Stephen Foster things, but they're not really a whole lot of Pennsylvania folk songs that people might recognize. So Johan came up with the idea of writing some, and he calls them Pennsylvania Faux Songs, F-A-U-X, Faux Songs. And the titles are just great. It's one movement, but it's five sections. And he calls it On the Banks of the Susquehanna River, The Gettysburg March, The Girl from Allegheny. This is great. The Punxsutawney Groundhog Waltz, and ends with the Allentown Jig. We premiered that piece on July 4th of this year, which was literally the 190th anniversary of the band. And he insisted on coming to premiere it, so he came and conducted it. So we had the composer conduct his own piece on the commission for the 190th. It was great fun.
Fantastic. And looking back at this old photo from the 1880s, it looks as if the band members are enjoying themselves as well.
Great photo, yeah. I love it. It's, you know, it's very rare that in my experience at any rate, to see a picture of the 19th century musician or anyone smiling or laughing. And these guys are just a guffaw. I mean, they're just in a moment, because so often they're very stoic and staid and serious. But that photo is just wonderful.
So you're not only preserving a legacy, but you're looking to the future.
Looking to the future. You have to look to the future.
Great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.